Hello and welcome to the Dentist Podcast. I'm Eddie McKenzie, editor of the Dentist magazine, and today I'm in conversation with Michelle Hardy, who's a sales support manager at Practice Plan. The subject for today's discussion is fee setting. This is an area which is absolutely fundamental to the successful running of a dental business, and yet at the same time is one which many practices struggle with. So Michelle, there are a lot of different factors to take into consideration. There's a lot of information which needs to be factored in, so much so that it can be a little bit overwhelming at times for practice, I think. From your perspective, when first starting out though, what should people be looking at when first thinking about at what level to set their fees?
First of all, what I've often found, Eddie, is that most practices that I work with very rarely do a proper analysis and look at everything they need to look at before they set the fees. They're very often just looking at what practices are doing down the road, so thinking perhaps, well, if their price is this, we need to be a little bit cheaper. But of course, if they do that and it doesn't cover the costs of the bills, then straight away they're putting themselves under pressure and on the back foot, because then they're relying on selling the higher ticket item treatments to bring the money in. And then it very much feels like a sales pitch to the front desk team and the clinicians in the practice. So you're starting off straight away on the wrong foot when you're doing that. While I would say you've got to be mindful of what other practices are charging, you can't just benchmark them, because otherwise it's just going to be a race to the bottom who's going to be the cheapest in the hopes that you get the patients. And the reality of it is, whatever you charge, you can't be everything to every patient. You know, you have to understand that. Patients we perceive, you think, all choose on price, and they don't. Price is definitely a factor without a shadow of a doubt. And I guess that's more important now perhaps than perhaps in previous years, where we're starting to see things like gas prices rising and are patients going to pay that amount of money to come and see the dentist. But the reality is, if we can't cover the bills in the business, then you're in that same situation where there's a danger of you losing the practice altogether. So you've got to be a little bit brave and stand firm, I think, when you're setting your fees, to try and get it as close as what you can to what you actually need. Now, you won't know what that is until you've done an analysis of your running costs of the business to start with. So looking at how many surgeries have you got? What are your utility bills? What costs are you incurring every day? What sort of money have you got put aside, obviously, if you're paying off loans to buy the business and things like that? So the first place to start, really, when you're thinking about setting your fees, is to have a look, a good look at all of your running costs in the business. Then you need to have a look at how many clinicians have we got, how many hours have we got, where people are actually delivering income into the business to recoup that money. So what you're trying to do is, we're trying to replace all the running costs and the overheads of the business and make sure there's enough money in the pot to pay our clinicians what their expectations are, and then work out what hourly rate do you need to be working your time out at. So once you've done that, the next step, obviously, when you're looking at setting your prices, to be realistic about how long are you booking for your appointments, because this comes back to that what we're saying earlier about when you're comparing with the practice down the road. Obviously, you might book 15 minutes for an examination appointment, they might book 20, they might book 30. They might include x-rays in the cost of their examinations where you charge extra for them. So when you're just benchmarking against other practices, you're not necessarily comparing apples and apples. You can be comparing apples and pears. And obviously, the patient's not necessarily getting the same experience or the same service even. So start with the running costs. Work out what hourly rate you need to achieve and deliver that. And straight away, that then takes the pressure off the practice feeling they've got to sell. The one thing I would say in that is, remember as well that you won't earn your hourly rate that you need every single hour in a working week, because of course you're going to have patients that fail to attend, you're going to have emergency slots in your book, and you're also going to have a little bit of downtime where there's never been a patient booked in there in the first place. So you need to allow and build in what we call some non-billable time when we're working out the factors of how many hours we've got available, so that, again, it will inflate the hourly rate you need when you are charging for your time, to allow that little bit of wiggle room. So assuming we've got all of that right and looked at how long you want to book for your appointments and what you were going to include in that, it's then a straightforward calculation of your hourly rate times the amount of time to work out what the cost of the exam is, the cost of the hygiene appointment is. And in theory, it sounds really easy, doesn't it? But we always have to bear in mind that when we're working with practices, you've got a starting point in which, where are we now? So when you've done that as a cost exercise and looked at it, what you're charging at the moment may be a significant way off what you need to be charging to deliver what you need. So it's a case then of working with you and putting in place a program to say, we know we need to get from A to B. It's too big a shift for us to do that in one jump. So how are we going to get there? How can we break it down? And it might take us several years to get there. Or very often when we're working with an established practice, especially when we're looking at things like plan prices, we might look at old historical plans that are really out of date and not delivering what the practice needs. So we can ring fence them and think, well, that's not working for you. Let's put some new plans in that are closer to what you need. And providing the practice comfortable with matching that with their pay-as-you-go fee, then we can gradually move those ring fence patients on the old prices up to what the new ones are paying now without risking the goodwill that you've built in your business over the years. So things like that, it's getting the right advice, taking it step by step and gradually breaking it down into little bite-sized chunks that feels comfortable for you. And every practice will want to move at a different pace. In some cases, we work with practices where they're saying, well, I know that's what my fees really need to be, but I'm not really comfortable with my charge and my patients that. Or I don't think my patients will pay that. So when we're having that conversation, all I can do is say, look, all we can show you is if this is what you want, this is what it looks like. But we never lose sight of the fact that it's your business. As long as you're aware of the implications of what you're doing, I feel that we've done our job properly. So there's never any pressure to say, you've got to do this.
It's difficult, I guess, to be in the position of an advisor in these circumstances, and in some ways having to encourage, in some instances, having to encourage a rise in fees from practice owners who are nervous about putting their prices up. But I guess equally on the other side, if a business owner hears that their fees are too low and it's going to take them 2 years to get to the level they should be, I imagine some might want to hurry that process up. So how do you go about managing those types of conversations?
It really depends how big the gap is between where they are now and where they want to be. So what I'll do is when we're looking, especially at costing things like dental plans, for example, when we look at old plans, what tends to happen is over a period of time, the model changes in practice, and this is where they fall behind. So years ago, you might have set a dental plan, for example, or you pay as you go fees. I'm having a 10-minute exam and 15 minutes with the hygienist. Well, over the years, that's obviously changed now. So it's much more common to have at least a 15 minute for an examination and probably a 30 minute hygiene. So obviously your old prices, unless you've prorated that up for the extra time, then they're not reflective of what you need to charge for your hourly rate. So sometimes there's quite a big discrepancy between where you are and where you need to be. So now some practices will be really brave. And they'll say, well, if that's what we need, that's what we need. We've got to do it. We haven't got a choice. But what you've got to bear in mind is they may have been in that situation for quite some time and never really drilled down and had a look at it. So taking the longer view and doing it over perhaps a couple of years, one will be feeling a little bit more comfortable for some, but also every step that we take is getting them a little bit better off than where they were. But I mean, if there's been big changes in the practice, maybe you've lost a clinician, or maybe you're thinking about, well, I need to sort of build up the goodwill of the business because I'm thinking of retiring. So there'll be some life changing or practice events that mean you've got to move quicker. So there is no hard and fast rule. It'll vary from every practice to practice how you go about it. The important thing is acknowledging that you need to do something. You can't stand still. I definitely would recommend for all practices that they look every year at this as an exercise and say, are we on track? Are we off track? And what do we need to do to get us back on track? You know, whether that is that little bite-sized chunks, well, we talked about this last year and now we need to do phase two, or whether it is we need to be a little bit braver now. And what I would say is take advice from whoever it is, whether it be your plan provider or maybe it's an accountant you work with, but you need to take some advice to really get an understanding of your business, you know, rather than just feel that feels about right and then end up getting it badly wrong.
Well, that actually raises a point about the professionalism of dental business ownership. Dentistry is in some ways quite a strange industry because practice owners often or sometimes or often are individuals without any particular formal business training. And added on to that is the impact of the NHS, where particularly when it comes to fee setting, that isn't something that practices can change to impact the running of the business. Is there a noticeable difference? Do you notice a difference when speaking to principals who have been operating in the private market for a while compared to those who have been in the NHS more recently and perhaps have a different mindset or openness when it comes to fees?
Absolutely. And I would say with all NHS dentists, whether they're just introducing a plan alongside what they're doing or whether they're now thinking about conversion, it takes them a good few months to even start to get their head around thinking differently, you know, because you've done your training. I've cut my teeth on the NHS. So I might have done this for many, many years. And there is that fear around if I charge too much, my patients won't stay. So obviously it depends on your circumstances, what you're going through at the moment with how important it is to get this right. If you're a practice that at the moment is saying, well, we're predominantly an NHS practice, but it would be nice to have a plan run alongside that just to give us another income stream, perhaps for if we're delivering all of our UDAs, which wouldn't that be nice in the ideal world at the moment, but we're delivering all our UDAs perhaps and we haven't got any more capacity on the NHS, or one dentist wants to move out of the NHS and go private, but they're keeping the contract. So it depends how much is riding on it in terms of how big a step do you take? I think it's always the right decision to look at what do you need your plan to be. Whether you run with it or not, I still think that is very, very important to at least know what it should be. But obviously, if you've got NHS income, then it's going to be a blend of the two. So you might not be as dependent on that private income and might want to go at a slower pace. But definitely you're right, Eddie, in as much as an NHS dentist moving into a private arena, for some of them, they haven't got a clue what to set their fees at. You know, it's really, really difficult for them. But I would say even for fully private practices or predominantly private practices that have been pay as you go, again, so many of them, when we have that first conversation with them, haven't looked at the running costs. You know, they might look at the year end accounts once a year and think, oh, that didn't go very well, did it? But there's so many practices that we work with that I find are not under the skin of it every month, knowing what their running costs are. You know, so this is just good business sense, really, to make sure we help them get it right.
Just on the subject of practices converting away from the NHS and going private, anecdotally, I don't know the statistics on this, but anecdotally, I know some practices, when they convert, rather than the fees being a race to the bottom, actually they specifically want to try and raise their fees to show that it's at a higher price point denotes a different level of service. That's a conscious thing that they're deciding on when setting their fees at a higher rate. Is that something that you've noticed at all, or something that's borne out by the statistics?
Yeah, but I mean, that's only one aspect of it. I mean, obviously, yes, they want to set the fees higher, but it's not all about fees. I know that's what we're talking about today, but they need to think about, especially if they're going to be a mixed practice where perhaps some clinicians are private and some are NHS, it's not an all or nothing scenario. It's, well, what are we going to give our patients different to be able to justify the fees? Because when I'm having an examination with a dentist, the dentist is going to check all the areas of my mouth, whether I'm an NHS patient or whether I'm private. It's going to be the same examination, essentially. So you've got to think about what's going to be the difference. How am I going to feel the benefit as an NHS patient, sorry, as a private patient, as opposed to an NHS? So you've got to think about your service. And it's not the big things I've found, you know, that the patients are aware of. It's things like, being seen on time, so not being kept waiting. So if I'm having a patient in for a checkup and then I'm saying, oh, we'll do that treatment while you're here, Michelle, save you coming back. If I'm a private patient sitting in the waiting room and I've perhaps given up my lunch hour or some of my time to come, that's not good business. It's not good service to your patients. It's more changes in mindsets. It's being more flexible with the hours maybe that you open to offer perhaps more suitable times, earlies and lates, or maybe Saturday mornings. It's about what materials can you use, you know, giving you more flexibility. What sort of treatments are out there that patients are historically not having on the NHS? You know, it's broadening the horizons and looking at price. Yes, is important, but it is only one factor. You've got to look at holistically at the whole practice and say, how is the patient going to know I'm experiencing something different now to what I had on the NHS? So for a lot of patients, it's more about value rather than it is about price. Because while genuinely I would say, yes, there definitely are patients out there that can't afford private dentistry, for some it's about, does it represent good value for money? You know, do I feel that it's worth it? And we have a big education piece to do with patients, you know, to educate them around what the differences are, what difference it'll make to their care, and why it's important that they pay that. Because we know patients that attend more regularly, we can detect problems earlier, we can nip things in the bud. It usually means less invasive treatment, because what we all want for all of our patients is to keep them as healthy as possible.
Well, this actually takes us nicely onto the idea of shared goals and value. And when looking at a rate or fee for a service, in its most simple form, it's about finding, in terms of supply and demand, it's about finding the point at which both the person providing the service is willing to provide it and the person who wants to use that service is willing to pay for it. And you spoke earlier about some dentists being uncomfortable with putting prices up because they would be scared that they would lose patients. But actually, I suspect in a lot of cases, patients genuinely value the service they receive from their practice and are quite comfortable with the idea of price inflation, particularly so through COVID when they can visibly see the extra pressures put on practices. Do you think sometimes there can be a disconnect between how patients feel and what dentists think their patients feel?
Absolutely, every time. You know, that well, it's a bit like when they're doing treatments, isn't it, and the treatment should be £80 but £60 has come out of the mouth because they don't feel comfortable having that conversation about money sometimes. So it's almost a bigger education part for the practice. And I don't mean just the dentist, obviously it's the whole team, because especially with your front desk, if they don't believe in what you're doing and understand why you're doing what you're doing and why it has to be like it is, then they're not going to feel comfortable, and it's them that are the first line of contact for your patients. So we have to get it right with the whole team in understanding why it's took a change and why it needs to be those prices, you know, because everything a practice, it depends on you getting that right, you know, being able to pay the bills every month, you know, and having that worry hanging over your head. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with NHS dentistry, providing that you've got a strong team and obviously you can cover your UTAs, you can hit your targets, then for a lot of practices, they're very, very happy in that world. But certainly what we're seeing at the moment is more and more practices that are really struggling to fill vacancies. We're seeing associates that don't want to work under the NHS anymore. So practices are having to think different about how they charge their patients. But there's no point going through all of that if you don't get the numbers right. So you do have to be brave sometimes. I can remember having a conversation with a dentist not long ago, and you know, we'd looked at plan prices and he'd said, yeah, but the average for the area is only about £14. And we did all the sums and worked it out based on the length of appointment that he wanted to have for examination. I think on the plan that he wanted to charge, the dentist was going to earn something like about £78 an hour. But if the patient weren't pay as you go, then they were going to earn £135 an hour. So it's not rocket science to say, but then where are you going to get the commitment from your clinicians, one, to even want to buy into you having a membership plan to give you that secure income that you desperately need to replace your NHS? So there'll be factors in the practice that drive that price and make sure you get it right. One thing I will say, when we're setting prices for plan membership specifically, the absolute key that we must have commitment with the practices is that what we call the acid test works. So what I mean by that, Eddie, is that it works for the patient and it works for the practice. So when the patient is stood at the desk doing the sum, saying, OK, so how much is it going to cost for an examination? How much is it going to cost for my hygiene appointments and my x-rays? They're doing the sums at the desk. And we should never be in a situation where the plan is more expensive. Now, in my view, it doesn't have to be loads cheaper. It's nice if you can demonstrate a little saving to the patients, but the membership plan is not designed for that. It's designed to allow your patients to spread the cost over a number of months for all of their routine care if you're offering maintenance plans. And of course, you can have full care, full capitation plans if that's your wish. But it's allowing the patients to spread the cost. They then generally will get a discount off the cost of their treatment. So that will bring me on to another point in a moment I want to come back to. And then, of course, they've got access to an assistance scheme should they have an emergency or an accident, and we can request funding towards the cost of that. But none of that matters if we don't get the sums right when we're working out the costing of the plan. And again, this is where sometimes fees fall into disrepair with practices, because they'll put one side of the equation up. So they might put the plan price up, but not the pay-as-you-go. Or they'll do it the other way around and say, oh, no, we don't want to rock the boat with our plan patients. We'll leave that, but we'll keep putting our pay-as-you-go fees up. But you can see how easy it is to get out of sync then. So one side or the other of the equation doesn't deliver the income that you need. So in terms of treatment costs, going back to what I was saying about being honest about the cost for your time and your exams and things like that, we've got an added factor that we need to add in when we're costing for treatments, because, of course, if you're having a plan mechanism in place where we're given a discount off the cost of the treatments, it's no good giving that discount off the hourly rate we've already established you need to run your business. So we need to inflate it for the pay-as-you-go patient, so that when that discount comes off, then it means the plan members are still delivering the hourly rate you need for your business.
The example you gave at the start there about the dentist wanting to say one figure but finding another one's come out of their mouth, I'm sure that's one that many dentists will be able to relate to. On that specifically, though, how important is flexibility when setting fees? And is it okay for a dentist to be, when in conversation with a patient, gauging their reaction and reacting to it? Is it okay to make exceptions on some occasions and do something cheaper for some goodwill, or ultimately is it the case that if that's the fee, that's what it has to be and there should be no movement on that? What's your view on that?
My view on that is that you need to set the plan price that meets the needs of the whole practice and stick to it. Because first of all, how would your team even manage a situation like that? So saying, well, my plan price is £16.50, but that's my next door neighbour, so I'm only going to charge you £12. So first of all, you're not even going to have a plan model that's set up to accommodate that. So once we set the fees and everybody's agreed and they're happy with them, we can put in different plan structures to meet different patients' needs. So typically, obviously, you'd have a 6-monthly plan where you would expect probably 80-90% of your patients to sit, and it supports private dentistry and private prevention models. But you'll have extremes either side of that. So you'll have some patients that perhaps only need to come once a year, and you'll have the other extreme where they need extra help from the hygienist with a periodontal disease. So you could have two exam and four hygiene. Now, we can do any combination of numbers of one exam, two hygiene, one exam, three, once we know what the hourly rates are. But once we've put those plans in place, it's really important the clinicians stick to them. The one area that I find, if they are nervous, where they do tend to do that, it's £80 but £60 comes out of the mouth, is when we've put in place an annual plan. So if we're working with a practice with a membership scheme, the only plans that I would recommend they even put on the literature are the 6-monthly and above. But obviously, they've got an annual plan set up for the patients that genuinely need it. But that's exactly what it should be. It should be there as an option for patients where they can genuinely meet their clinical needs by them only attending once a year. But it's very easy, if the dentist is uncomfortable with the prices, to say, oh, well, don't worry about paying that, Michelle. We've got another plan that I can put you on that's cheaper. So it's getting the dentist right from the start to stop selling platinum membership on price. They should be selling their plan membership on the health benefits it's going to bring to the patient by attending regularly. So it's trying to change their mindset. But again, it takes a little time for them to get the head round. But if they are that kind of dentist that's veering towards an annual plan, then you may well have a large proportion of patients where that suits. So where that might come in handy, I mean, when we're doing conversions, for example, again, you may have moved to a model under the NICE guidelines where you've got a lot of patients coming 9 monthly. So they kind of sit between the two, really. But we just have to remind the dentist that when you've got a target number of patients to achieve an income, for everyone you put on that annual plan, you need 2 patients to say yes to you as opposed to 1 that's coming on the correct model. So, no, we don't deviate from the plan prices. We just make sure we train the practice and the dentist to feel comfortable having that right conversation. Because let's be honest, it's about what's doing right for the patient. So when you're selling them a membership plan purely based on price because you're frightened they won't pay it, you're not necessarily acting in that patient's best interest. So it's much better we get it right from day one.
You mentioned earlier about making sure that you have buy-in from the team. And of course, a lot of conversations around treatment plans will be done outside of the surgery, away from the clinician. They'll either be with someone from the reception team or maybe a treatment coordinator, people who are perhaps less likely to feel that they can take it upon themselves to change the prices and say a lower figure. Is there any argument at all to be had that maybe some conversations should be taken away from the practitioner?
Not quite entirely, almost. We're almost there. You're absolutely right. The conversations about money shouldn't be done in the surgery because, again, it's about the health messaging that you want to get over. So we know for a fact that if the clinician, the dentist, makes the recommendation to the patient to becoming a member on the plan, they're far more likely to do it than if he leaves it to his front desk team or even a TCO. So I don't want my dentist to get involved in having the money conversation in the surgery, but I want them to do that endorsement. So it's about them having a proper process to make sure that patient journey, the ball doesn't get dropped. So we would recommend that the endorsement and the recommendation comes from the dentist using the health messaging and benefits, but then they have the conversation about the money at the desk. So one thing we'll often do for our practices, we'll do them little plan menus that compare the pay-as-you-go prices with being on the plan, and we'll give them all the tools to make it easier for the reception team to have that conversation. But like I said earlier, if we get that acid test right, where it's win for the patient, it's win for the practice, it's not costing them any more money, and then we can break that figure down even further by saying, well, how much does that mean the patient's going to cost them monthly or even daily? And when you're starting to talk about pence to be a member on a plan, it suddenly puts things in perspective a little bit. I think both for the front desk team to feel that it's value for money and then respectively for the patients. So it's getting it right and making sure that patient journey is correct. But the dentist can't relinquish responsibility completely. But ideally, we don't want them talking about the money, because if they're not comfortable, they're going to get it wrong anyway. So leave it to the team. Let us come in and train your team how to have those conversations, but make sure the patient journey, we don't drop the ball.
Yeah, I have actually been in a dental practice before, sat in reception and had a patient come out from their appointment, go to the front desk to book their next appointment. And the receptionist has told them what they're booking in for, what treatment it was, and then told them how much it would have cost, and then apologized. And that immediately, you're thinking from the off, then the patient is then being told this is an expensive treatment. It's just that it's immediately putting it in the wrong frame, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And when we're training the teams, I mean, before we launch a plan in any practice, Eddie, we would go in and train the whole team, because you've got to get them believing, you know, and there should be no apologies for your price. But that comes down to educating the team and coming from the practice, because if you find you've got a practice that doesn't bring the team along with them and understand why the price is that, they may feel nervous. But there is no excuse. There shouldn't be an apology. They could say, I can appreciate why you may feel that's a little bit more than you're expecting. However, this is why the price is what it is. So it's about training the team to understand if we want to run our business, that's what our prices need to be. You know, and you shouldn't have anybody on that front desk that doesn't believe in you, your business, and what service you want to deliver to the patients. So it starts right at the beginning. So certainly if I'd heard that, I would be taking that member of staff in hand or having a word with the practice manager or the dentist, you know, and just saying, look, it may be that they're just nervous. It may be that they feel it's really expensive and I wouldn't buy it. That very well may be their view, but they're coming to work to do a job. They're coming to work for the business and to work for the practice. So they've got to act in that best interest. So it could just be a training need where they're a little bit nervous, but either way, that needs to be picked up on and dealt with.
You say it should start at the beginning. And I think most people, I guess, would think of the reception being that first point of contact. But increasingly, I guess, patients are doing research before they visit a practice. They're doing checking out websites or looking online for different things. It surprises me a little bit how many practices will have all the information about the practice itself. They'll have meet the team, they'll have the location, they'll have a guided tour maybe, they'll say all the different treatments that are available, but they won't list the price. And I don't mean for plans, because that's slightly different. Plans normally are listed, but a lot of practices will have the treatments, but just say for more information or for a price, contact us to find out more or something like that. Where do you sit on that? Do you think that a website should list explicitly what the price is or what the range of prices could be, or do you think it's better to wait until they're in a practice to then have the conversation where the price can be explained more thoroughly to the patient? What's your view on that?
I think absolutely there should be some transparency, Eddie. Now, what I don't agree with is I don't believe on your website that you've got to list every possible treatment a patient might have. But certainly if I was doing the trawl in the internet and looking round, I would want to have a guide so I know what I'm walking into. Because let's be honest, if I've looked at the fees on a price list on a website and that's frightened me off, even if I'd have come to the practice and you hadn't seen the fees, would I stay? And is that the kind of patient that you want? Because they're going to come in, they're going to think, crikey, that's expensive, I'm not coming back here again. And then the bad publicity that can do when they go away and tell all the friends, oh, well, I went to that practice down the road, it was really extortionate. So there should be at least a guide. But what I think practices have to be careful of being really specific, it needs to be quite fluid and say, for example, our fillings or extractions start from, but have some wording on the website that said these fees are a guide just to give you an indication of what our fees are. But once you've seen this clinician, we will give you a full treatment plan explaining our fees before you make a commitment to go ahead. So I wouldn't say list every single treatment, but I think definitely the basic stuff that a patient's looking for, they're going to want to have a guide.
Yeah, you touched on something there about, I suppose, if a patient sees something listed as being a certain fee, and then by the time they go to pay, there's an extra £20 or £30 added onto it because it's slightly more complicated than they first thought, they're going to be potentially more annoyed about that than they were if they just heard the higher price in the first place, aren't they?
Yes. And I think that's why you need that extra little caveat, both on your fee list that's displayed in the practice and on your online, you know, just to explain that. I mean, again, it comes back sometimes to having the girls trained on the front desk to have a good conversation with a patient when they're saying, oh, well, that all sounds OK, but roughly how much is it going to cost me? You know, just to be able to say, well, look, until you've been and the dentist has seen, I can give you a guide. But obviously, depending on the size, how much time it's going to take, you know, it may vary from that. But we can't tell you categorically it's going to cost you £65 until we've seen you and assessed what treatment you're going to need to resolve your problems. So again, it's about being confident with your team, having the right conversations, standing by the fees, but being able to flex that with the patient so the patient understands that's not set in stone. All we're saying is, you know, if it was a very small filling, that's roughly what the starting cost is going to be for you. But make sure you've got that caveat that says, once we've seen you, we will give you a proper treatment breakdown with the prices based on your needs for your specific treatment. And I think that's where sometimes practices for me go wrong, when they do display the fee list, because they don't put that on. So then it comes back to that patient feeling disgruntled, thinking, oh, well, on your website, I've printed it off. Here it is. Yeah. You've said it's £65, so you can only charge me £65. So yes, be visible, but make sure that you sort of word it in that way that there is some flexibility.
And I suppose the issue with something being listed on a website is if the website then is not kept up to date or constantly reviewed, that people could be seeing rates or fees that are out of date and then get the wrong impression from it. So actually, this leads us nicely onto the idea of reviewing not just websites, but reviewing prices. We said before, when people are thinking of converting, they should be doing a full review of the running of the business and working out costs and everything. I imagine when people convert from the NHS, they are willing to do that, or they accept that that's a part of the process once. How difficult is it then to go through that process again? Is it the same process in its entirety the second time you do it, or third time you do it? Is there a shorthand that you can do and use previous figures or trends or what? Or is it the same process every time that you do it? And how often should a practice be doing that, reviewing its prices?
Well, firstly, I would say there's not a specific time in the year. It doesn't matter. So everybody automatically thinks, oh, it's got to go up in January, or it's got to go up in April, or whatever it is. So in looking at your fees, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. There's nothing wrong with you selecting your bread and butter sort of items and say, right, well, roughly our plan prices are going to go up in January, so we need to do a review of our fees. Now, when we're doing a plan review and we're looking at fees for the next financial year, we always make sure that we do those acid tests with the practice and say, OK, well, if you want to put your plan to that, this is what your pay-as-you-go fees need to be. So we'll make sure they've looked at both sides of that. But it is the treatments. So, yes, again, we've got tools that we can give them to help them and say, look, this is what we said it needed to be 2 years ago. Your fees are wrong on your website. You haven't put them up. You haven't done what we said we were going to do. So come on, let's get a grip of it. But I think at least every year, every 12 months, all practices should be looking at the fees to say, are these still fit for purpose? Do they work? Do they deliver the overheads? You know, is it everything we need it to be? Are we on track? Now, going back to you, is it more difficult or is it easier? If we've done that financial analysis with a practice, it's not a case of going right back to the beginning. It's a case of going back to the practice and saying, OK, has anything changed? Well, let's have a look at where you are now. Has your running cost changed? Or is there something that you're going to have to do in the practice over the next couple of years you're going to need more capex for? So it's often just a readjustment of what we've already done. Now, some practices will come and say, I've looked at what inflation's running at. I'm just going to put my prices up 5%. And if they want to do that, that's absolutely fine. You know, but again, it's just making sure that they've looked at plans and pay-as-you-go fees in conjunction to make sure they're balanced and we're maintaining that acid test. But what I would say with the fees is, you know, I touched on it earlier about, obviously, with a plan member, because you're given a discount usually off the cost of your treatments, we've got to make sure that we build that in. Because if we're saying that the minimum hourly rate we need is X, let's say it's £150 an hour, there's no point saying, well, we need that as a minimum to pay the bills, but now I'm taking 10 or 15% off that. So obviously, it's remembering as well to inflate the pay as you go to allow that discount to come off for your plan members. Because remember, it's your plan members that are committed to you giving that secure regular income that we want to look after. A pay-as-you-go patient will always attend when they feel like it. It's a bit like the tail wagging the dog scenario. So it's important we get it right for the ones that are bought into the practice giving you that security. But you should do it every year. But don't be frightened to think, well, you know, we're quite a way off perhaps with our crown and bridge work or our lab-based treatments. The bigger ticket items, patients are not noticing as much because they're not having them as often. So you might do two increases in a year. You know, I know some practices where they might look at the fees once a quarter, But they're the ones that are much more on the ball, they're more established, they know exactly what they're doing. That's quite rare for a practice that's just making that transition to feel comfortable with that. Even getting them to do it every year sometimes is a stretch for them. So again, it depends where they are in their life cycle, in their practice.
Yeah. Well, speaking of cycles, I think we've almost gone full circle in terms of this conversation. We're certainly almost out of time, I'm afraid. Just one final thing. If you have any final tips for any listeners in terms of fee setting, if you could give them one piece of advice, what would that be?
The final tip is just to don't just look around you. Yes, be mindful of what your competitors are doing, but if it's not going to work for you to run your business properly, then you need to think very seriously about, can I even afford just to match what my competitors are doing? Because, as I said, patients are not necessarily comparing like for like. You need to understand, what is it we want to offer our patients? What kind of service do we want to offer them? How long do we want to book to our appointments? Work out what you need to deliver that and stick to it.
Perfect. Okay, Michelle, it's been great speaking to you. Thank you very much for your time today. Just one final thing before we finish. Sorry, if anyone wants to get in contact with you or in contact with Practice Plan, what's the best way to do that?
The best option is just to go to the Practice Plan website, practiceplan.co.uk. You can have a look around our website, find out a little bit more about our service and request someone to contact you. Or, of course, you can give us a call on 01691 684120.